Hi, my name is Joshua Craver. I'm a PhD candidate at Purdue University, and today I'm going to be talking about some research that I've been conducting with Dr. Krishna Namali at Purdue, as well as my advisor, Dr. Roberto Lopez at Michigan State, where we've been looking at the physiological acclimation of petunia seedlings to varying light quality, light intensity, and carbon dioxide concentration for indoor production. So there's been an increased interest in the use of multi-layer vertical production systems for the production of a wide variety of high-value crops, with one of those crops being annual bedding plant seedlings or plugs. And one of the reasons for this interest in using this type of production is because of the consistent quality as well as the predictability that you can have when growing plants indoors using sole source lighting. And so previous research, both at Purdue as well as other universities, has found that this method is effective for the production of bedding plant seedlings or plugs. However, with production in indoor environments, there are many aspects to consider, and so there's still a lot of research that needs to be done as we seek to optimize this type of production system. And so really the objective of this research then was to evaluate the effects of light intensity, light quality, and CO2 concentration on seedling morphological and physiological responses. Specifically, one of the goals of this research was that we really wanted to look at these physiological responses to light and CO2 under these multi-layer production environments. And our hope was that with this knowledge about these physiological responses, that we would then be able to use that knowledge to better optimize these multi-layer production environments. Additionally, we also were interested in determining if elevated CO2 could potentially increase seedling quality and decrease production time. However, due to time limitations that I'm going to have today, I'm only going to talk about a small section of this research, and specifically I'll be focusing on some of the physiological responses that we were seeing. And so for this study, we used Petunia, Cultivar Dreams Midnight, and we sowed seed in 128-cell plug trays. And so you can see an example of a 40-cell plug tray here in the bottom right of the screen. And so all this research was conducted in a walk-in environmental growth chamber. We had two growth chambers for this study with the following set points that you see below. And in addition to the environmental data that we were able to collect from the walk-in growth chamber itself, we also use CR1000 data loggers to be able to collect environmental data within the specific treatments that we were implementing in those growth chambers. Specifically, we were looking at canopy temperature as well as air temperature. And so I'll talk a little bit more about those treatments now in the next slide. So specifically, like I mentioned, we were wanting to look at CO2 as well as light quality and light intensity. So for CO2, we had two different concentrations we were wanting to look at. We were looking at 450 and 900 micromoles per mole. Additionally, for light intensity, we had two intensities of 150 and 300 micromoles per meter squared per second. And for light quality, we had two different red-blue light ratios of 50-50 or 90% red and 10% blue. And so if you look here in the figure on the right, you can actually see an example of the lighting systems we were using. These were Green Power Philips research modules. And so I know that's a little bit confusing, so to give you a little bit better idea of how these treatments were actually structured, I have this figure here below. And so you'll see that we had two separate chambers for our two CO2 concentrations. Chamber 1 and Chamber 2, each of those either having 450 or 900 micromole per mole set point. And then within those given CO2 chambers, we then had all of our lighting treatments available. So you can see that we had our different light ratio and light intensity combinations all represented within each of those chambers. Now, in terms of the data that we wanted to collect, like I mentioned, we were not only concerned with the growth and morphological data, but we were also interested in looking at the physiological data. Specifically, we were able to collect this data using a Licor LI6400 XT, where we were able to collect light response curves using a whole plant Arabidopsis chamber that you can see here in the bottom left, where we're able to account for the total leaf area of the plugs. And we also used a leaf chamber fluorometer cuvette, which you can see in the bottom right here, where we were able to collect ACI curves. And all of this data that I'll be presenting today was collected 28 days after germination occurred. And so wrapping up for this study, it was a completely randomized design, where unfortunately, because we had those two CO2 chambers separated, we weren't able to effectively randomize those CO2 treatments. However, within each of those CO2 treatments, we were able to randomize our lighting combinations of specifically the light intensity and the light ratio levels. The study was repeated 3 times over time, and we used both ANOVA as well as nonlinear regression to analyze these results. And so before I get into the results, I just wanted to briefly walk through some of the environmental data that we collected. Specifically in this table here, you'll see that we have our two chamber set points, which is our two growth chambers we were using. And within these growth chambers, you can see our day and night temperatures and our day and night relative humidities. And I'm just showing this to show you that we did have tight control within these growth chambers and maintaining those set points. Additionally, here below, we have our light scans that we were able to take with a spectroradiometer. And so on the left, you'll see a table where we have our mean PPFD values within each of those lighting treatment combinations. And additionally, on the right, you can see the spectral quality for each of those lighting combinations that we had represented for this study. So moving on to the results. If you look first at this figure that I have here at the bottom, I'll just quickly walk you through how this is segmented. So we have two different CO2 concentrations of 450 and 900. And then within each of those CO2 concentrations, we have our two light intensities of 150 and 300. And then breaking that down even further, we have our two light ratios of 50-50 and 90-10. And so for the actual mean separations that you see at the bottom here, unfortunately, again, because we had the two CO2 chambers separated and they weren't randomized, I'm not going to be able to show you statistical differences between those two CO2 chambers. So the mean separations you see here are actually within a given CO2 chamber. So we're not going to be comparing the two chambers statistically. But I will talk about some of the trends that we were seeing with those differences in CO2 concentration. Specifically, if we start by looking at total dry mass, we actually see that we had an increase in total dry mass as we increased that CO2 concentration. So this confirms for us that those plants were able to, at least to some extent, utilize that extra CO2 that we were supplying to them to increase biomass. Additionally, if we look at the light intensity and light ratio treatments within these CO2 concentrations, we see that we had the highest total dry mass under the light intensity, the higher light intensities of 300 micromoles per meter squared per second, and we had the highest total dry mass accumulated under the light ratio of 90% red, 10% blue. And so you can see that we have the highest total dry mass under those two combinations. Additionally, with leaf area, if we're looking at leaf area, we've actually found that light intensity and CO2 concentration did not have a great effect on leaf area. Where we really saw the greatest effect was in terms of the light ratio. Specifically, we found that the ratio of 90% red, 10% blue actually increased the expansion of our leaf area. And so you'll see under both of these CO2 concentrations that those 90% red, 10% blue treatments were actually resulting in the greatest amount of leaf area accumulation. All right, so now I'd like to move into some of the physiological measurements that we were taking. Specifically today, I'll be focusing on the ACI analysis. For those of you that may not be familiar, I'll quickly walk you through how we conducted this. And so for those that may not be familiar, again, an ACI curve is essentially looking at the assimilation of CO2, which we have here on the y-axis, as a function of intercellular CO2, or CI, which we see on the x-axis here. And so essentially we're able to look at how assimilation of CO2 changes as that intercellular CO2 concentration also changes. And so for our ACI analysis, we were able to fit this using nonlinear regression to the following equation. And then using this equation, we were then able to do multiple other calculations to look at many other factors. And so I'll be walking you through a couple of those calculations today that are going to be most relevant for the results that I'll be presenting. The first of these calculations I'd like to show you is what we call assimilation at operating point, or AOP. And what operating point is it's essentially the CI concentration at our ambient CO2 concentration. So if you'll remember in this research, we have two ambient CO2 concentrations of either 450 or 900 micromoles per mole. And so when we're calculating AOP, we're looking at what's the CI at that ambient CO2 concentration. And then after we find that CI, we're then able to find where the assimilation rate is found on that curve. And so you can see the AOP listed here on this graph. Additionally, we were also able to calculate CO2 compensation point, which is the CI when assimilation is zero. And so again, going back to this graph, we'll see that we can calculate the CO2 compensation point as essentially where we're intersecting that x-axis. And this is going to be the point where the gains from net photosynthesis are actually equal to the losses from respiration. And so again, this is the CI concentration when our assimilation rate is zero. And then the last calculation I'll be talking about is Rubisco efficiency, where we're able to take that CO2 compensation point and calculate the slope of the response curve at that point. So specifically, you can see the slope or the Rubisco efficiency located here at that CO2 compensation point, and this gives us a good idea of the active Rubisco content. All right, so moving on to the results, I'd like to look first at the assimilation at operating point. And so what we found was that the assimilation at operating point was actually highest under our 50-50 light ratio and our light intensity of 300 micromoles per meter squared per second. And so if we look again at this figure at the bottom, you'll see we have our two CO2 concentrations and AOP listed here on the left, our two light intensities, with our light quality ratios within those light intensities. And so again, under increased percentages of blue light, we actually found, and under the higher light intensities, we found that we had a higher AOP. And when we're looking at AOP, it's important to understand what we'd call a co-limitation of AOP. Specifically, we find that the assimilation at the operating point is actually co-limited by two other factors. What you see here is the Calvin cycle. And so with these two other factors, we will not actually see an increase in the assimilation at operating point without seeing an increase also in these two other variables. These two variables being Rubisco efficiency, which you can see here, which is actually the enzyme Rubisco, the ability for that enzyme to actually fix the CO2. And the second co-limiting factor is RuBP regeneration, which you see here on the left, which is that 5-carbon molecule actually being regenerated to go back into that initial catalyzed reaction by Rubisco. And so if we don't have an increase in both of these other factors, we won't be seeing that increase in assimilation at operating point. And so by understanding these two limiting factors, we can better understand why we're seeing that increase in the AOP value. And so moving forward, we were able to confirm some of these results. First, looking at Rubisco efficiency, also known as carboxylation efficiency, we found that we had the highest Rubisco efficiency under, again, the light ratio of 50-50, so higher percentage of blue light, and also the higher light intensities. Additionally, an interesting result that we found was we actually had a decrease in the Rubisco efficiency as we increased our CO2 concentration. And so we have what we would believe might be an acclimation response, whereby the plants are actually utilizing less resources into active Rubisco and actually using those elsewhere. And then lastly, I'd like to look at electron transport rate. And so this is going to directly relate back to that RuBP regeneration that I was talking about earlier. Specifically, we found that electron transport rate was increased, again, under the increased percentage of blue light and also increased light intensities. And so again, you'll see that we have the highest electron transport rates under those two treatments. And so this higher electron transport rate, as you've seen in some of the other presentations, is ultimately going to lead to increased amounts of ATP and NADPH through the light reactions of photosynthesis. And that ATP is ultimately going to be used partially in the regeneration of RuBP. So we can kind of correlate these two and see that the effects of increased electron transport rate would ultimately come around to actually increase our regeneration of RuBP. So again, we see that both of those co-limiting factors are increasing under increased percentage of blue light, which is increasing our assimilation at operating point. So to try to wrap up and make sense of all this, looking at simply just the morphological data, we found that the greatest biomass accumulated under high light intensities and also the light ratio of 90% red, 10% blue. Ultimately, this was due to increases in leaf area, and with that increased leaf area, we're ultimately increasing our light interception, and that's ultimately increasing our total biomass or our total dry mass. However, what we found with increased percentages of blue light with our physiological measurements was that we had higher AOP, higher Rubisco efficiency, and higher electron transport rates under this 50-50 light ratio and higher light intensities. And so to try to sum it up shortly, there's the possibility that blue light might be stimulating what we might call a sun-type response, where we're increasing things like Rubisco efficiency. And so ultimately, with future research, it'll be interesting to look at how we can maybe utilize some of these increases in photosynthesis that we're seeing under increased percentages of blue light, and actually how we can translate those then into increases in biomass. And so with that, I'd like to really quickly thank Phillips Lighting as well as Ball Horticulture Company for their support and assistance in this research. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have with the remaining time. Thank you. Yes, and so that was all done by collecting data on the ATI curves using the LI6400. We're able to change the CO2 concentration and measure what the CI and the assimilation rate is and basically get curves like you see here. Then using the equations, we're then able to fit that curve using nonlinear regression and then break that down to basically figure out what our AOP, our CO2 compensation point, Rubisco efficiency. So using that initial curve, we're then able to break that down to actually measure some of these other variables. Yes, calculated, absolutely. Okay, thank you very much.